Testing, testing. There we go.
Because they'll be gone.
I tend to have a soft-spoken voice, so if for some reason I get in that mode where my voice comes, you know, I can put people to sleep like that. But not tonight. If I have to stay awake, you do too. No, I'm very grateful to be here tonight, to be with you. And first of all, they're so full of life and joy. You know, you have a young child, just comes in with a group of adults and stuff, we all become children again. And it's so true. So tonight we're going to talk about teaching them about God and about Jesus. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about them and what, y'all forgive me, but if I don't stay close to my notes, I won't stay on cue tonight, so that's important for us to do. But tonight, in all of the sessions that you've attended already, there's just been a thread. Have you noticed it? About going through the disciple-making process. And I thought it was interesting that I've had this sign for a long time in my conferences. And listen to what it says. It's Ephesians 4, 11 and 12. It was he who gave some to be prophet, some apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, and some to be pastors and teachers. To prepare God's people for works of service. Where did you hear that just recently? Okay. So that the body of Christ may be built up. Now you're saying, that's an adult message. It is an adult message. But we have been given the opportunity to teach children about God. Over here, I've used this so many times, so if you've ever been with me before, you've probably seen it. But God created a child with a capacity to learn about him. Do you believe that? Yes. Sure. And that's what makes us want to teach children about God, is we know that he's given them the capacity to do that. Let me give you some encouragement. I hope parents tell you every Sunday what a wonderful job you're doing, how much they appreciate you, and how wonderful you are to their children, because that's going to encourage you. So I know Melinda and her staff do that on a consistent basis, but believe that, because it's true. And one of the things that Jesus says to us to do is found in Psalms 145, beginning with verse 3. And it's one of my favorite, but it really kind of boils down to me what my job is as a preschool teacher. And even though now, currently, I'm not teaching preschoolers, I'm with them, but I taught for over 25 years, or more than that, in a classroom. While I taught, while I was at Parkway, I was in a classroom on Sundays teaching preschoolers in my local church. But this is what really spoke to me, and when I saw it, you know, you read scriptures and you read them more than once, and then one time God hits you with, this is what you meant. It says in verse 3, I'm going to go one verse up. Yahweh is great and is highly praised. His greatness is unsearchable. One generation will declare your works to the next and will proclaim your mighty acts. I will speak of your splendor and glorious majesty and your wonderful works. Notice in verse 4, one generation will declare your works to the next. One generation will declare your work. Does it say generations? It's not plural. Mm-hmm. So it's my generation to the next generation. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's pretty important. I mean, I think there are numerous stories throughout the Bible where God had things happen in such a way that it gave the leaders of that time reason to teach the next generation. As they were going to cross the Jordan, they gathered the stones. And what did he say? He said, "These, when your children ask you what happened here, tell them the story of how I led the Israelite children." There's many of those stories around, and those are one of the stories we get to tell preschoolers. So tonight, what I really would like for us to do is to think about what is it that God wants us wants us to tell his children, your twos and your threes. What is it that God wants us to tell them?
God loves them.
God loves them. Simple. But it's how we do it that's multiplied, isn't it? What does that mean for us? How do I love another? How do I love the child I'm teaching in Sunday school?
It's about, like, you know, I really feel like God gave you the word connection, like, a long time ago with the little guys, because you really, you know, can't reach them if their needs aren't met, you know, and just to connect to them.
Perfect. Meeting a needs on demand for any age group, for anybody, but specifically for preschoolers. Because some two-year-olds are struggling to be able to communicate with you anyway, aren't they? I mean, some can speak in fluent sentences, and others have short phrases. Some may not even want to talk to you yet. They may be too shy. There's a little girl in our church. Her brother cannot stop talking to me unless he gets started. His mouth just goes on and goes on. Grace Ann, I can't get her to respond to me at all. I've seen her respond to other children at the church. There's nothing wrong with her. So, hi, Grace Ann, how are you doing today? So, trying to make a connection with her is going to take a little bit of work on my part. But I can't rush it. Her mom and I are very good friends, so she knows who Miss Ann is. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But it's important that we know what the needs of our children are, that we understand that they need love and acceptance. They need to be able to have some independence in the classroom. They need to have some relationships that they build. They need repetition. That's one of the ways that they learn. So I'm not going to list and go through all of that. Tonight we'll talk interchangeably about some of this. But how do we teach preschoolers from the perspective of what they can know about God and about Jesus, about the Bible, about the church, about their family, about his creation, about himself? So there's lots of things that we can do every Sunday morning. You can do one or more of those things. You can't talk about the Bible without talking about God. You can't talk about creation without talking about God. So there's always opportunity to bring biblical teaching to light in that. Now, one other thing that I want to ask you is, if we truly believe that God created the child with the capacity to learn about him, what does that mean for me as a teacher?
That he made you with
the
capacity to teach.
I'm sorry? You have to have the capacity to teach them. And you got there first. This was going to be my last one, but since you said it, I'm going to do that. Okay, I can change it up if I want to. As a person who teaches, that's going to be a key. Now, the first one I thought about was, well, I love these magnetic walls, y'all. I love it. Is a teacher who plans.
I have to shift it over to the right a little.
Oh, well. Teacher who plans.
There is one of those orange ones with the clip is strong.
Oh, thank you. Excuse me. Don't want to drop me. Anybody's coffee. I'm a shorty. So. Okay.
And moving over to the right just a little bit.
There you go. That's what you meant.
You said move to the right.
Move it to your right.
The whole thing. I don't know why.
It's because right next to the closet, it's not magnetic anymore.
Oh.
Oh.
Magic.
Okay, well, we're just going to move to the right. Okay. A teacher, you've got a plan. Sneaky. We got to start planning in order to teach. So what does that mean? Okay. First Baptist Church Houston has the ability to give you curriculum, leaders' guides, to share with you on how to do that very simply. And you think, gosh, there's 4 pages here I've got to read before Sunday morning. Well, you have to start somewhere. And one of the most important things I think is really good is that there's the Bible teaching on your adult level for you to read to prepare yourself for it. because a teacher that's transformed by the word of God as you prepare to teach will teach from an overflow of your own transformation of what you understand about that Bible story. So we grow as Christians. You know, we know the story of Jesus' birth. We know the story of creation. But we learn something new every time we study it. God's word is living and active. And it's to you so that it can be that for the child as well. So we got to make plan, but we got to study. So, that means that we're going to have to put a little bit of effort into it in our preparation, doesn't it, in studying. So let me encourage you to do some things. And I'm going to introduce you to some different ways of perhaps preparing your lesson and putting it in an order that you can come back to it in 6 months. If you have the same content area that's being shared, you might be able to come back to that. And, hey, I've got a book. I didn't have that one, but I have this one over here that I filed. I can use it again. So I'm going to just share some stuff with you in just a moment. So in order to teach children about God, we must be able to plan, we must be able to study, and that will prepare us to teach. So that's very simple. But how we do that, children are multisensory learners, aren't they? So that means a little bit of brain development, understanding about brain development tells us that when children can engage in at least three sensory experiences, not three experiences, but one experience that you utilize at least three of the senses, that you can retain the information much longer. So, let's say that that we are telling the story of David taking care of the sheep. And he takes them to cool water to drink and green grass to eat. And he counts them all. That's what a shepherd did. So David did what his father did, what his father told him to do. Do you do what your mom or dad asked you to do? Oh, they're going to say, yes. In a group time, one time, when we were telling the story, I came back and I wrote down each child's name I gave each beforehand. I said, tell me what you do that your mom asked you to do. I got everything from making the bed, taking out the trash, and feeding the fish. the parents saw it. I put it on the door as the parents came in. And one said, yeah, we've got to clean out that fish bowl, really. They've been asking me about that. So, you know, they're up with, but when you make that connection with the Bible, mm-hmm. you're utilizing their senses of hearing, their own thinking through that. But whatever your art activity might have been for that day, we want to make sure that the activity that you use to do biblical teaching actually does that. So I wouldn't do lamb with cotton balls. Okay, now I've really gone to meddling now, I know. But cotton ball, it's not wool for sheep. And what's the most important part of that story? David did what his father asked him to do. The sheep were secondary. So, I mean, if you do it, it's not going to shatter the kingdom. But if you want them to remember the story, you might think of another activity to do that's going to utilize the senses as you talk about that to that child, as you engage in conversation with that children, with those children. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't want to turn anybody off for this. Okay. When we think of activity centers where we're going to actually do the teaching, I'm going to guess that you already do this because I know y'all are up to hand. When a child comes through the door, what's the very first activity center they should see? The home living. Because the home living area is the most familiar to a child. It's more home-like. So in this door, coming through this door, where's the perfect place for the home living area? In this corner. Or in somewhere around here. Okay. Home living, would you say that it's a wild activity area?
Yes.
Yes.
Some days louder than others. Okay. So, what is another loud activity area in your classroom? Okay, music. Okay.
Cars.
Blocks. Okay, it's where the cars are stored. It's blocks. Because it just encourages that loud movement, body movement. That's wonderful. A physical learner is going to love to be there. Okay, I'll come back to that in a minute. So, you're going to have blocks. Maybe you have this door here. So, blocks may be here. What are your quiet activities?
Reading.
So books.
Coloring.
Colors.
Oh, we have puzzles.
Art. So we have art area.
Snack.
Okay. Good try. So I've got puzzles.
Well, art and nature.
So that could be more around in this area, couldn't it? One thing, there are some children who are naturally going to gravitate to one of those activity areas. So, it just means that we need to utilize the senses as much as we can, but that's also the kind of learner they are. They use their body, but some can reflect. Do you have children that walk into your room who are kind of quiet and they kind of look it over to see what going on before they choose a place to go to? How many of you do that? Mm-hmm. You go to the grocery store, do you have a place where you start? Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't always do. Okay. So, children approach learning in a variety of ways. Some are logical learners, some are musical learners, some are relational learners. I can get through all of them, but when you're actually thinking about that, think about that little boy that maybe, and really 2-year-old's attention span is about that. So you filter that into it, it's going to be kind of different, isn't it? In how you set up your activity. If you have art, they may zip through that, or they may not even go to it if they're a reflective learner. What if I put a book in the block area? For a child who likes to use their body, they may never look at a book in the book area. But if I put it over there, and it has something to do with cars, or blocks, or the Bible story about building the temple, or something like that, that could engage them to look at something and make it. One year, we had... in our weekday program, we had a very convenient caterpillar book that week. And so the teacher just happened to put it by the art table. She propped it up in the window, and it was really kind of next to, she was really taking a chance. The paint did not get on it, by the way. But this child looked at that and drew a perfect, the caterpillar, you know, as it starts like this, you know, the very hungry caterpillar. She just had it. I feel I wanted that picture so bad to bring it to my office, but I couldn't dare take it away from the child. Too much effort and work in it. But do you see how that mixed up? Mm-hmm. How you could encourage a child that doesn't naturally look at books to put something there to pique his interest about what he's really interested in? Okay, now you're saying, where is she going with this and how is she talking about this involved learning? If you pique their interest, you've engaged their emotions, and they're ready to hear what you have to say. Mm-hmm. So then you can interject the biblical content. So our learning centers are, as we just mentioned, books, blocks, puzzles, home living, nature, art. Is that it? That's it. That's all five. Okay. And then we have, this is how we teach the biblical message. We do it through songs. We do it through Bible verses or phrases. We do it through, I said songs. We do it through the Bible verses, the Bible story. We do it through life application statement. And we do it through Bible conversations. That's how you teach the biblical message, using one or more of those. So if in your mind you wanted to build a web about, okay, here's the book area. Okay, so if I have a book in there that's from my leader pack
that's about
go and tell about Jesus, if I had this in the book area, and my Bible story may be how Jesus told others about God, I want to be able to tell others about Jesus. Okay? So, this is going to be in the book area where I'm going to mention the Bible. I'm going to be able to maybe refer to the Bible story, not tell all of it, but tell a portion of it. Then I might be able to talk about a Bible reference. I may interject the Bible conversation like, can you tell me what you know about Jesus? Can you tell somebody else about Jesus? Can you tell your friends what you know about Jesus? Sure. Okay. I've used how I'm going to teach the biblical message. I've used three examples of that in one area. If we did that in all five areas, it doesn't mean that you have to have a teacher in every area. Okay? But over the course of the session, you may determine, you may as a group already determine who's going to be in art or blocks, who's going to be in home living, or who's going to do what in your classroom. So you can change up. So as you move from, you have the capacity to talk to how many kids in your classroom, in a smaller group, how many children do you have the option to talk to?
In a small group, at least 7.
Okay.
And it gets up to like 14.
Okay, in this classroom.
We have a small
group. So in your block area, you may have 3 or 4 boys playing, or girls.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant the whole group.
No, and it sounded like that. I'm sorry. So you may have 3 or 4 in the home living. You may have 2 or 3 in the blocks. So if you're there, you have that option to say that to the other children. So over the course of the morning, your children could have heard the Bible story or the Bible verse related in conversation or made application to before you ever get to the home living. You may have heard it 5 or 6 times. I mean, home living to the group time. See, the coffee's kicking in. So, does that make sense? So before your children leave, if you include group time, they may have heard the Bible verse, the Bible story, the life application, like I just used. Tell me what you know about Jesus. Can you tell someone else about Jesus? So using that kind of conversation encourages the child. It helps them feel like, I can do that. Yeah, you can. Talk about your own experiences that you get to tell others about God and about Jesus. So it's that kind of content that we teach, that we can do it numerous times. And one of the ways preschoolers learn is through repetition. But I'm telling you right now, that's how Ann Edwards learns, is through repetition. Mm-hmm. I do not
And you know, I have a question about that, related to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because my director, in the mornings, she would do crafts. Some of them would go to the black area, and it's loud. Some of them go to home living. Some of them go to the Play-Doh table. Mm-hmm. And then when I get over there to the block center, I'm thinking they probably just forgot about the Bible verse. And I ask one, God works, you know. He remembered that Bible verse. And I said, how do you keep that in your mind like that? And it, all this loud noise. Because
they did it in a way that they liked it.
Mm-hmm. But you'd be thinking they even forgot about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it's programmed.
And we have to teach our parents the right things to say or ask to get the answers they want about what they did in Sunday school. Do you all give out the leaflets that go home that we do?
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you heard a parent say, what did you do in Sunday school today? We played. And the parents thinking, that's all you did, you didn't hear about a story,
I don't see anything that you did that you were going to bring home.
The question could have been rephrased to say, tell me about David today. Did you talk about David? The parent, if they'll take one look at the Bible story on that page,
then they'll know what the story was about. Ask the question about David, and then he may tell you. So it's a matter of encouraging our parents. Now, based on what Dr. Stanley said in the larger group, making connection with parents and family, that's one way to do it. That's one way to do it.
We usually tell our parents, we learned about Joseph today, we learned about David.
At the door.
That's a great way to do it.
That's a great
way to do it. Or older girls who are like, do you want to tell mom what you learned about? And then the kid can do it.
Yeah.
If we had a craft, I used to try to also, how did that get in? How was that part of the story?
How did that relate to the story? So there's method to what we think our madness might be. When someone who hasn't taught preschoolers looks in and thinks, oh my word, I could never get that. Sure they could. But we know what our room is feeling like and what children are doing, how they move around the room and how they move toward friends or to new friends. Twos and threes do not keep the same friends from Sunday to Sunday. They change. You know, that's typical. That is not, you know, unless their parents are friends and they do things together, they may do that. But I'm telling you, with that group even, familiarity breeds discontent. They know the buttons to push. They're almost like sisters and brothers at that point. They know how to get on each other's nerves. It just takes one little moment and then you have to separate them. And that's all part of learning how to get along with each other. Okay. Now, there are some other reasons, but one of the things I wanted to say is that when you separate the activities that are loud from the activities that are quiet, the noise doesn't go all the way across the room. It stays in one general area. So you're kind of confining your noise for your reflective learners. And you've got your relational and active learners over here. And your logical learners could be everywhere. We know that music is math. Is that right? Mm-hmm. How many piano players or other instruments do we have? People that play other musical instruments. You have to learn math to know how to do that, don't you? Mm-hmm. Okay. So a logical learner may also be a musical learner. So it's kind of, isn't that amazing how God created us? It is amazing. Okay. Let's have the learning center activity sheet. There are 10 reasons we want to use the learning centers. And while it's coming around, you're going to have all these 10, so you don't have to write it. It's going to all be on the sheet. So you can just listen to me. Okay. Children learn within the context of relationships. Teachers play an important role in Bible teaching. If you really think about it, none of us learn anything outside of a relationship with someone else. Now, you're saying, but Anne, I can read a book, I can read it online, yeah, but you had to have somebody that encouraged or sparked your interest in that subject to know what to do. But only a child can learn from a relationship. Do you agree with that?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't think we can learn outside of the context of relationships. It's important. I mean, when you're talking about small children, as adults, we learn how we can do that. I have an extra one if anybody needs it. Okay, so that was number one. When we're in, now they will learn from each other in relationships as well as with teachers. Okay, so they learn in context to each other. Not all children learn in the same way.
Oh, sure.
Okay, now, I'm going to really meddle for a minute here. I am a logical learner, I'm a relational learner, and I'm a natural learner. So what that means for me is, I love
I get up before the sun rises this time of year. And I love to see the sun come up. I take my dog walking in the morning, and oh God, it's beautiful. Only you could take that. You know, it, some mornings it's better than others, you know, just because of the weather, cloud weather. So I'm a natural learner. I love looking at things that relate to God creation. I'm a relational learner in that I love to talk. My dad said, you should talk the horns off a billy goat. That was just a statement from his own upbringing. But I like being with people. So the other part of that is I am a logical learner in that my mind thinks in logic. I can't play an instrument. Oh, I would love. I tried so hard to learn to play piano. But that those brain connections had already gone. The ability to do it has already left the building. So, but I can enjoy it, and I love it. I love most forms of music. But, so that's how I learn. So if you know how you learn, make sure that when you plan and you study for what you're going to do in that session, that you don't choose the way you learn to choose an activity. Did that make sense? Mm-hmm. Don't choose an activity for children based on yours only. It might work out that way. But try utilizing ways that children learn so that they all have a chance to catch it. If I didn't, can we open the door?
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Yeah.
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 I thought it was
big.
No.
So we close the other doors.
Yeah, close the
door.
Thank you.
It was only 27 degrees.
Right?
So, as teachers, we need to be, think about your children and how, if they are those kinds of learners, so that you can begin to plan your activities based on what their abilities and what their, how they can learn and how you can enhance their learning. All right. The next one is, number three, children learn best in loving, stress-free environment. Activities provide freedom to play. A child's play is their work. That's how they learn to get along with each other. It's how they learn to negotiate. Some adults haven't learned how to do that. But, not get political, but have to get along, learn how to get along with each other. To care about each other. Have empathy. We are all going to be upset with each other at some point. There'll be people we may not agree with or whatever, but we learn to work within that. We learn to see the differences and learn how. And they won't know how to do that unless they learn in a stress-free environment. And Sunday mornings can be pretty stress-free for children because they're given the opportunity to have some freedom and play. This is just one of my pet peeves. Technology is really coming down. It's touching children younger and younger every year. My husband and I went out to eat at a restaurant with a couple one night, and the table that I could see them just perfectly. And the husband and wife were engaged in conversation, and the little girl was sitting with her earphones on, looking at her iPad. Not once did her parents talk to her, engage in conversation with her, nor did she. She didn't even try to get their attention. I thought,
I know.
You know, I just want to go over to the parents.
I know.
I've seen it where the mom, the dad, the son, and the daughter all were in there. They didn't even...
And then on the other side of it, we have the emails, and I know it's just my age. Y'all forgive me, they're much younger, just forgive me. But email
And texting has taken the English language. They are bringing cursive back in our state.
Oh, they are. Oh,
and not Texas, but in Tennessee, they're bringing back cursive. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. So it's, you know, it's just different. I'm not saying it's the best thing or that they're doing everything wrong. But while we have an opportunity to invest in children, we need to do it to the very best of our abilities. You know, we may not be able to have the very best of everything in our classrooms. But you don't have to. You have enough. If you have your curriculum and a few toys, which I have seen your resource room.
That's pretty nice.
Y'all are lucky. I mean, my church has the same thing, and our teachers are so lucky. I don't want you to spend any of your money preparing for Sunday morning. Now, some will bring in fruit or some toys that relates to that, and that's fine. But you have so many resources. Okay. So, and I've already said that children are multi-sensory learners. So try to utilize as many of the senses as you can in each activity so that when you do begin to talk, that you begin to learn information. Okay. Children need a balance in play, quiet learning, and active learning. So the light activities and quiet activities, you bring that balance to the learning. Okay? And then children need opportunities to make choices. That's when the learning centers are also good. It allows a child to choose an activity area to go through. When I was coming up in education, it got to be really strong in that we encouraged the child to finish what they were doing in one area before they moved to the next. I'm kind of a little bit, it's okay because some 2 and 3 year olds just can't finish. Is that going to be stressful for them if I make them sit? It's not going to shatter the kingdom if some of their artwork is not finished. But they had fun doing the part they did. So, okay. But what do children learn by learning to make choices?
Independence.
They also begin to learn the difference between right and wrong and the consequences of their choices. So, hands-on activities result in lifelong learned skills. What are some things that you've done in your classroom that is a skill builder for them?
Graduate puzzles up to the level of their ability.
Books. Learning to read from left to right. And using that. Creating activities where the child can cross the midline in their brain. They become better learners, better readers, the more they can exercise the left and right. A lot of kindergarten teachers tell me now when they're trying to get them to print and to write, but even first grade, to write sentences or even begin to read, they use their finger and they get to the middle of the sentence and it stops. They haven't been able to exercise left and right right brain hemispheres together enough that they start there and then go on instead of being able to go all the way across without stopping. So what does that do? Okay, I know y'all just kind of gather your paper, stand up, and give yourself a hug. Just stand up, give yourself a hug. Oh, I'm sorry.
That wasn't very nice to me.
Okay, just give yourself a hug. Okay, now you can sit back down. Okay, I did that for a reason. Because now you have just crossed the midpoint. Anytime the right goes to the left goes to the right, you're crossing the midpoint. You have just awaken your brain. Don't you feel more awake right now? Okay. Some of you have, I try to notice this sometimes before I make this statement. I really haven't. How many of you are crossing your legs?
How many are what?
Crossing your legs right now when you're sitting here. How many times have you changed? You know why? It got hot in here. You're getting sleepy.
You do that without thinking because the brain tells your body to move and to wake up. And that's how it does it. One of the ways. Exactly. They get the wiggles. That's for sure. But isn't that amazing? I mean, it really does work. It really does work when you think about it. So the fact that children are remaining active, it means they're going to be awake. And they're going to be ready to learn. So that was just a little side note. And one of the big things I think is so important is children need the success and satisfaction in activities for learning to stick. Are the activities that we choose for them to do they have the opportunity to create success for that child and satisfaction? If a puzzle is too difficult to work, give them some verbal communication. Like, have you tried turning it around? Why don't you just put it on the side, pick up another piece, try another piece? If it is too hard, what I have done before is I have picked up a puzzle and said, that one's too hard for me. Let's choose another one. I'll put it up on the shelf. I'll come back, put the pieces together, let them choose one that's not as difficult. I want them to be successful at it and have some satisfaction. I don't want them to get discouraged and feel like they can't do anything. So, all right. Number 9, learning centers offer opportunities for children to learn to interact with each other. And we talked about learning how to negotiate, learning how to get along, what works. Some of y'all are laughing. You have children in your classroom that don't get along?
Don't share.
Or maybe it's a child in your classroom that stepped on your last nerve. There are some children that teachers have to pray about. Because they're going to come walking through your Sunday school class the next Sunday. You hope. We make friends, we develop relationships just like children do. Some children don't build relationships well with others as frequently. Because twos and threes are just in the learning process with this. But we do the same thing. We have our friends. Not everyone we see is our best friend. And that's, I don't think God intended it to be that way. But we can get along. We can learn to love each other. We know why we come to church. But this, it can also relate to work relationships, neighborhood relationships. So it goes beyond. We're giving children opportunity to experience being together, having fun together, and enjoying each other's company. So, okay. And last, activities offer children an opportunity to practice Bible skills. Now, I don't want a show of hands. I just want you to answer this question in your mind. How many of you actually let the children use the Bible in the classroom? Let them turn the pages. Let them carry it around. Let them hold it while you're telling the Bible story. Children need that opportunity to practice Bible skills. And it can start very simply with yours in your classroom for your age group. When you tell a Bible story, you just simply say, this is a story that's found in my Bible. That's a skill. You have to know, it's not a story that I just read in a book. It's actually something that God wanted people to know. So as they get older, they can use the Bible, know what the Old Testament is, the New Testament, where the story is found. That we have books, we have chapters, we have verses. So there's lots of things that we can come to learn. Not that it has to be so rote memory, but that it becomes something very useful, just we do it without thinking kind of thing. If you ask a lot of children, probably of 2 and 3s, they may not remember you, that you taught them. They may not remember if their parents move away, they may not have, but you have a role in their understanding of who God is. They may not remember it.
But you have a role and you have an opportunity to lay that groundwork. It's kind of like scaffolding. We're getting ready to build. There are some things we have to do first before we move on and do the next thing. So the loving warmth and caring that you show to children as they learn in learning centers, as they relate to their parents, you know, talk to their parents. Allow them to hear you say, we had a great time. When a child leaves the door, through the door, and said, thank you for coming. It was fun. He enjoyed the art, you know, or whatever. Let that parent feel like $1 million. We had a child with special needs in a kindergarten class that I taught 1 year. And he had sensory integration dysfunction, which meant he couldn't be still for long at any point. So many times I was his buddy. I was the lead teacher in the room, and so someone else, when we did group time, somebody else had to take that role. And one day he sat in group time for 20 seconds, and I said, yes, 20 seconds is 20 seconds for him. You know, it was great for him because that would not normally be. And some Sundays are more difficult for him. Sometimes we stayed outside in the hallway a little bit more than we needed to because he just couldn't get all the too much sensory stuff was going on with him. Well, his mom came to the door, and I always made an effort to say, we had a good time today. We really had a good time. And the mom, you could just see her take a deep breath. Well, one little girl named Ashley, blue-eyed, blonde-haired Ashley, sweet, beautiful little girl, said, today he didn't have a good day.
Never wanted to say.
And I said, but then I thought, has she been listening all this time that I've been saying it to his mom?
Yeah. They would know it.
Yeah. And they know black and white. This way or it's this way. Nothing in between. So, you know,
she beat you to the dough. She beat you to the dough.
Yeah, she did. But, you know, she's a sweet little girl. She did have a little But, okay. So, one thing I want to show you, I said I'd tell you something about your activity centers, your winter packs. If you would write these concept areas down, and I know y'all have them right up here on this page. I'll make sure I didn't.
It's a night, I can't think of it. Okay, here we go.
Get out your paper and pencil or turn the sheet over. This is what I brought for you to write.
Yeah.
These are the concept areas that we teach. You can open up your curriculum every Sunday and determine where the content you're teaching is. If it's a community and world, church, self, family. I know I'm going too fast. I'll go back over. Creation, Bible, Jesus, and God. If you
teach at the Loop campus with us, there is one of these in every single classroom.
Yes, we have one.
Okay. This tells us what babies through 2, 3 through pre-K, what they are capable of learning about each one of these content areas. So this is wonderful. Yes, ma'am.
We don't work at the Loop campus and want a copy of that. Where do we get it?
I can check you up.
She's got you, Kelly. We'll take care of you. Okay. So these are our content areas. So if you made a file with each one of those content, would be a file heading. Okay? You tracking with me now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then behind that,
behind each one of those eight categories, put books, put a file for books, puzzles. It can be Bible markers. It could be anything that relates to God. It could be about creation. It could be anything. You see what I'm saying? When you go through your... Okay, for instance, this was supposed to be a little cube, and I just took the pictures apart, and I could actually put the... This looks like a Twister game, but it was one that we had at Lifeway for a long time. I'm not sure if it's available anymore. I wish it was. But I could put this down on top of a circle if it's on the floor, and the child could toss a bean bag to the one, and if they got it, this one was run in place. So they would do that. Okay? So this is games. You can have, in every one of those categories, you can put books, puzzles, games, Bible markers, stand-up figures, which are the characters that you put on the blocks. You could put block accessories in there, home living recipes or whatever. You can begin to build your file under each one of those content areas, and also a Bible teaching picture because you can reuse it. When we had, this is 1984.
This is old.
But I've had this puzzle, maybe not quite that long, but I had the picture. So because I had multiple pictures, I made a puzzle. All I did was get the spray adhesive and put it on foam core. And so the children loved to play with it because it was thick, their hands could maneuver it, and it's only four pieces. So for two-year-olds, if you just cut it in two pieces, they could put it together. So this allows you to build your own file, and then you can, and of course this was when Jesus went to the temple with his mom again. So that's one way to do it. And sometimes when you have too many of the stand-up figures that you attach to blocks that tell the Bible story and all that, sometimes I keep those, I cut them out, and they become Bible markers for the Bible story. So that's just another way to kind of keep it going. These are a whole set of pictures of animals that you match together. Like, this is, these are two pictures of the dog. So you match the dogs. And then the cats, from kitten from kitten to grown cat, that kind of thing. So there's a variety of ways to keep them. But just put them in your file. And then when your curriculum calls for something, you may not have a book that it asks for, and you may have additional books in there that you could use for that same one along with the book that's in the current one. And you will be amazed at how much you can build that up in just 1 year. I wish I could have brought pictures of one of my teachers in my class. I didn't train her to do this. I'm just very grateful that she did. She loves teaching children. And every Sunday, I see stuff that came from kits from 4 years ago. I mean, she's been teaching for years. And she brings it back out. And when you walk into her room, it's a plethora of activities and fun. You know, everybody wants Miss Cheryl as a teacher. Because, and I said, Cheryl? And she is an executive in a company, and she doesn't have an education background. And so I said, what led you to teach? She said, I wish someone had done it for my son. So I want to do it for somebody else's son. And the neat thing about it is that she shows up on either Friday or Saturday to set up her classroom every Sunday. And she used to bring her mom. That was their special time together. And her mother would help her. And her mother is no longer able to do that. But Cheryl comes just as faithful as she always did. To do that. So it's meant a great deal to us to have her in our ministry. But this is just going to help you be a better teacher, just utilizing the resources. I used to really make people feel bad and say, you were poor stewards of your church's money. You did not use your wig pack more than once. So I'm not trying to slap your hand. I know that sounded like it. Not trying to do that. I just think there's so much there for us to have. And when you build those smiles and you don't know what else to do with them and you think, I can't use it anymore, I don't need to say that, give it to a child when you go on a visit. If there's a child that's sick or he has a baby brother born or something, take him that if you make a visit to the home. So you can give away some of these items, get it back to your church if you do backyard kids clubs or any kind of thing like that, to utilize with younger children that might have come. Okay. Also, I bought the muffin tin. But asked him if he would go get some pom-poms. And so he said, is this okay? I said, oh, this is perfect. Because, like, three-year-olds they can sort by color, they can sort by size, and all you have to do is have it there, and they'll do it themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Try utilizing things that are not always the same thing in your class all the time. Mm-hmm. Shake it up just a little bit.
And you can tell, because then they gravitate towards something new every time.
Mm-hmm.
Different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another one is if when you're telling the story, if you ask a question about the story, and if they answered it, have them come up, and they can determine to, with every answer that the children give, they get to choose the one they want to pick up. And then that's why you didn't show the teaching picture at the beginning of your story, and they build a picture in your mind of what the story is like, and that's a really good teaching technique, and that's another reason they can retain it. And then they can begin to notice the characters. So when you uncover the picture, you can say, I want to get the story right because there's so many temple stories. Can you point to the picture of David in this? So they have to remember what they heard about David and what his part was in the story, and then they can locate that there. So that's just little things like that that can enhance your yes. Any questions? Any takeaways? What's one thing I said tonight that you would be willing to try? Yes, ma'am.
Like you said, we are so familiar with the Bible story. So sometimes we say, oh, I know the story of Noah. I can easily tell it. But you said read it again so that you get a fresh insight into mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm. As teachers, we need that, that repetition too. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all. I hope this has been fun. Thank you all for coming. I know that the staff here enjoys your commitment.
Hang on, before y'all leave, we have some questions.
Are we supposed to go off and sit in the house?